day or something.
It's 6 o'clock. 6 o'clock. Welcome to the Planning Commission meeting for Tuesday, January 16th. Can we have a roll call, please?
Commissioner Mack?
Here.
Commissioner George?
Here.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Here.
Commissioner Shiro?
Here.
And Chair Martin?
Here. Please stand and join me in our flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, next order is the agenda review. Do any my fellow commissioners wish to have a change in how the agenda is being handled tonight? Hearing none, seeing none, we'll proceed as written here. Next order is the community comments and suggestions. This public comment period is an invitation to members of the community to present issues, thoughts, or suggestions on matters not scheduled on this agenda. Comments should be limited to those matters that are within the jurisdiction of the Planning Commission. And the Brown Act restricts the Commission from taking formal action on matters not published on the agenda. The Commission requests that public comment be limited to 3 minutes, be accompanied by the voluntary submittal or speaker slips that I think are available here somewhere in the back of the room. Is there anybody from the audience tonight that would like to speak to the Commission on a matter not agendized tonight? Seeing none, we'll close the community comment period. Any kind of written communications that need to be added to our packets tonight?
None this evening.
Very good, thank you. We have just one item on the consent agenda, the approval of the minutes of the last meeting. Happy to entertain a motion.
I move that we approve the minutes.
Second.
December 19, 2017 meeting.
Sorry, second.
There's a motion and a second. Can we have a roll call vote, please?
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
Commissioner Shiro?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Yes.
Commissioner George?
Yes.
And Chair Martin?
Yes. That motion passes. Those minutes are approved. We have three items on our public hearing agenda for tonight. We can get to 8A. The first one, the consideration of an amended conditional use permit number 17-003, addition of a conference room and fitness room at an entitled hotel at 325 East Branch Street. And given the location of that project and the residential addresses of two of the commissioners, they're going to be recusing themselves at this time. We'll have three commissioners sit and listen for this item.
Thank you.
Give them an opportunity to vacate. If we can have a staff report and a review and bring us up to date on what's going on that project.
Certainly. Thank you, Chair Martin, members of the Commission. As you mentioned, this is consideration of amended conditional use permit 17-003. This is the applicant's request to add a conference room and fitness room at the entitled hotel at 325 East Branch Street. So to remind us where we're talking, we have an image up on the screen that has the property outlined in yellow. The property is zoned Village Core Downtown and Village Mixed Use. The front half fronting Branch Street is zoned Village Core Downtown. The rear half fronting Tally Ho is zoned VMU or Village Mixed Use. It is included in the D2.4 Historic Character Overlay District. Surrounding land uses are commercial uses, public facility across the street being City Hall, and residential uses to the east, and as well as to the north. As I mentioned, it's currently entitled with an approximately 29,000 square foot, 54-room boutique hotel. So the hotel was actually approved by the Planning Commission on February 16, 2016. Included in that resolution for approval was condition of approval number 31 that specifically says maximum building size shall not exceed 30,000 square feet. The applicant had previously approached staff regarding adding the desire to add a conference room and a fitness room to the facility. The original developer who entitled the project was not a hotelier. It has since been sold to a hotelier who feels that these amenities would help enhance guest stays and attract more guests. So they approached staff. After looking at that condition of approval, it was determined that we have to amend the conditional use permit, specifically that condition, to allow the building to go over 30,000 square feet. That's why we're in front of you tonight. The Planning Commission has previously considered a pre-application on this matter back in December. The Planning Commission at the time was supportive of the concept. At that time, we were discussing whether the conference room facility would be open to the public in any way, shape, or form, and we had some concerns regarding the location of that conference room if it were open to the public, location inside the hotel building itself, as well as any increases to parking. Now, the project description is a request to amend condition of approval number 31 to allow a maximum building size of 31,000 square feet. Overall, the building would be about 30,414 square feet. We had discussed during the pre-application stage if there was allowing 31,000 or if it was 35,000 or just kind of open-ended. Planning Commission seemed to be more comfortable with the 31,000 limit. And so that's what the request is in front of you tonight. This, again, is to add the conference room and fitness room for guest use only. And so the applicant has said, given the outlying factors of if we open this to the public, some of the issues that it might raise, we're going to limit it to guest use only. And this does preserve the parking totals and requirements as outlined in the municipal code. And it also results in minor architectural modifications. So here's an actual layout of the upper story of the hotel facility, of the boutique hotel. So this area, the creek, will run along this side of the building. This area, kind of in a darker gray, is the fitness room, which was face out to the creek. And this larger grayed area will be the conference room and supporting facilities associated with that. And here's a look at what architectural modification it would do. Essentially, the architect has added some additional windows to this area looking out toward the creek. So again, that's this elevation right here facing the creek. So this could allow visibility and natural light into that space. And then this is an image of the architectural modification to this portion of the conference room, so essentially adding a larger window to let in the light and air. So we're talking this elevation change right there. In terms of environmental review, the Planning Commission previously adopted a mitigated negative declaration for the project. The revised project does remain within the scope of the original project. There's nothing new that would trigger additional impacts or anything like that. So the no additional environmental review is required as proposed with this project. In terms of public notice, public hearing notices were mailed to all property owners within 300 feet of the site, were published in the Tribune, posted at City Hall, and on the city's website on Friday, January 5th. A sign was also posted at the project site announcing the proposed project. And at this point, staff has not received any comments from the public on the item. And with that, it's recommended the Planning Commission adopt a resolution approving amended conditional use permit 17-003. And, of course, I am happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you, Mr. Downing. Any questions?
So you're limiting the use to just guest use only. Is that something that will be for the duration of the hotel, or is that... is that something that later on they might be able to change if they wanted to?
So as proposed, the project description, so to speak, is for guest use only. That's what's proposed by the applicant. And that is what's being – that's the project description being reviewed and considered by the Planning Commission. So if that's approved, that would be the limitation on the duration of the life of the project. if in the future it is the desires change, they can always come back with another amended conditional use permit to revise that project description if the applicant so desires.
Thank you. That's my only question.
Commissioner Mack?
I have no questions for staff, for the applicant.
Okay. We're going to have the applicant come up, and if you want to say anything, or if nothing more, just be available to answer a couple of questions from the commissioners. That'd be ideal.
Good evening, Chair and Commissioners. My name is Michael Dammeyer, Stephen Puglisi Architects, and I'll be here to answer any questions, if there are any, from on my end. I think Matt did a good job at explaining, you know, what's ahead of us here, and I know the owner, SRK, who I'm representing, would like to see this go through to make a better project for the village. Thank you.
Very good. Don't go away. I know that Commissioner Mack has a question for you, so don't try to slink away from us here. Mr. Mack.
No issue with the fitness room, although it's on the second floor, that neither here nor there. Except being on a first floor, if you got equipment that's making a bunch of noise or wheels or something like that or dropping weights and everything, that's better suited on the ground floor. In terms of the comments that I had made last time, you brought this for conceptual review. Have you taken any of those comments back to the developer
in terms of
location?
Yeah, in terms of the conference room, I think the last time we spoke, we talked about the location, the fact that it is internal to hotel guest use. He agreed with where the location is. It's where he wants it. Reasons being, we're under construction. We wanted to find a place to put this. He likes that it's not bordering a bed wall. It actually sits above parking spaces. So in terms of keeping that function away from the sleeping units, he really does like. We're not adding anything to the ground floor, obviously, because of environmental impacts. If it were open to the public, then I think your suggestion would be closer to the lobby, and I completely agree with you. That's where it would want to be. But with talking with the owner, he was comfortable with having it in that location.
Because it's pretty simple to move a space like that down below, especially at this time, because if you did have to redo plumbing and convert that to, let's say, two rooms, take two rooms from the bottom floor and put them there and put the conference down, we're just talking about minor extending of plumbing from that already exists in the floor framing, so I'm trying to figure out why not put it on the ground floor. And then another question is who's using the conference room? I think I heard you just say that maybe guests that are coming to the hotel are using that space, or is it for the employees of the operation?
The actual use of the conference room could be open to employee functions. Obviously, that's at the discretion of the owner. It would just be an added amenity in case there's a group coming to stay at the hotel that would need a function space like that. That's the only feasible functions of that space, either hotel guests organized to use it during a slot of time or the owner.
So let's say time marches on, you're all complete, 2-3 years down the road, that conference room's not being used. What would happen then?
That would be up to the owner. If he wants to convert that into something else, something that would be more functional, it would have to run through the proper avenues at the city to make that change. But we did bring your suggestions to the table to him, and he was comfortable with right where it is right now. So
I see. Okay.
That's it?
The
only question I have, what's the approximate occupancy for that conference room?
The occupancy, it's actually not going to be an A2, it'll be a B. I think it's somewhere around 16 occupants, 16 to 20.
So if there was a conference or some other kind of guest driven event of some kind, even that's going to be a fairly small activity and a small event.
Pretty small activity, yeah.
Very good. That's the only question that I have.
Well, that's a good question. At what point do you need two exits out of that room?
When you're over 50.
Okay.
Okay. Any other questions of the applicant? Very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
As a public hearing item, I'm going to open the hearing now to the public. If there's someone from the public that would like to address the commission, now is the time to do that on this item. Seeing none, I'm going to close the public comment period. Any other questions, or we're going to start making kind of comments from the commissioners?
I don't have that many comments because we just discussed this item recently, and looks like nothing has changed since our last pre-application. I do like the addition of the windows that lets in more natural light and air. I don't have an issue with the location of the conference room being that it's so small and it's only servicing the guests. I have no problem with the additional 1,000 square foot limit increase that is being requested. So I'm in support of moving forward with this item.
Very good. Commissioner Mack?
Well, I'm kind of going to reiterate what I had said last time, and that is I think a conference room is a good idea. I think it should be available for use off the main lobby and adjacent to the kitchen activities and for circulation. At that location, it's not going to be used as much as you think it's going to be used because it's so remote. With that being said, I have a concern, and the concern is what that space could develop like in the future. I feel this is an attempt to add more square footage to the building and define it later. And our issue at the beginning when this first went through the process was parking. And when this building went forward, it even added four or five more rooms from the original proposal that was proposed. So now if this becomes another room or a king suite or a presidential suite or something like that, we're adding more parking to the facility. And with that potential there, I'm not willing to support it where it's at. I was real clear with my thought process in terms of where that meeting room should be. And being this late in construction, it still can happen because you're just dealing with walls and then plumbing up on the second floor. It's less likely to be converted into rooms if it was put adjacent to the lobby and in the buffet area. So that's my comment. I can't support that conference room where it's at. I can support the fitness room, but I can't support that conference room because it wants to be something other than a conference room and can be easily developed into another suite.
Being developed into another suite would have to go through a conditional use permit, or no?
That's correct. If it were to change the use, it would have to come back in, with another amended conditional use permit, correct?
Okay. The only comment I'm going to make is that what we have before us is a request from the applicant to add a fitness room and a conference room. I'm not going to sit here and attempt to predict what the marketplace might provide in the future, and I'm happy to just address the proposal that we have here in front of us. For me, I think you're stepping into kind of never land to micromanage the location of an ancillary room like this, which I think it at best is going to get modest use. I'm not going to say it's not going to get no use. I doubt it's going to be used every single week over the course of the life of the hotel. My guess is that it would probably be used more for staff meetings than it will be for, what I'm going to call public meetings or true conferences of the guests and things of that nature. But what I see in front of us tonight is a request to add a conference room and a fitness room
And I'm not going to stand in the way of the architect and the developer on where those rooms really need to be in their development. So with that being said, I'd like to move to approve the resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Rio Grande approving the amended conditional use permit case 17003 and amendment to conditional use permit 15-007 for the addition of a conference room and a fitness room at the entitled hotel at 325 East Branch Street applied for by SRK Hotels, Inc.
And I'll second that motion.
May we have a roll call vote, please?
Chair Martin?
Yes.
Commissioner George?
Yes.
Commissioner Mack?
No.
Okay, on a 2-1 vote, it does not pass.
Chair Martin?
Yes.
On a 2-1 vote, it does pass.
It does pass.
Correct.
With three. Okay.
Correct.
Stand correct. I was thinking we needed 3 out of 5. We need 2 out of 3. Is that
two
true?
2 out of 3, correct.
Okay, I stand corrected. My apologies. It does pass on a 2-1 vote. Very good. Thank you very much. The next item on here, item 8B, is consideration of Development Code Amendment 18-001, design requirements for post-construction stormwater compliance in the location of citywide.
And allow me to grab the other commissioners.
Sure.
I was going to say, let's get a full
Absolutely.
Crew here.
Stormwater compliance. The city is required to adopt regulations in order to comply with the requirements of the Federal Clean Water Act, the National Pollution Discharge Elimination System, and the California Porter Cologne Water Quality Act. The city has done so over the years by adopting resolutions and ordinances. The most recent ordinance in regards to post-construction requirements was Ordinance 660 that was adopted in 2014. Since I have been on board with the City of Arroyo Grande, it was brought to my attention that several projects within the City of Arroyo Grande were applying for what they classified as an exemption to post-construction requirements. After a review and discussion with Regional Water Quality Control Board, we found out that that was not appropriate. And because of that, we are looking at a recommendation to amend Ordinance 660 to eliminate that exemption from single-family residential and all other construction projects, and still comply with post-construction stormwater requirements. The only significant change proposed to the design requirements for post-construction stormwater compliance is the retraction of language in the associated flowchart regarding the exemption of the projects from the post-construction requirements. Any regulated project that creates over 2,500 square feet of impervious surface collectively over the entire project site and are required to meet the post-construction stormwater compliance. So if you look up above, what I did was I pulled in Ordinance 660, it's Exhibit C, but as part of this development code amendment, we've got it referenced as Exhibit A. If you go to, I think it's page 3, there's the flow chart of Exhibit A. We're going to eliminate that flow chart because it talks about exemptions, which are not relevant at this point, and Regional Water Quality Control Board does not allow those. So we're going to eliminate that. And then if you go to the next page, you can see anything regarding exemptions is being removed. There are still projects that are non-regulated projects that do not require the post-construction requirements. They would be things like slurry seals, pavement jobs that do not change grade or widen roads, things like curb and gutter that are minor projects. Those would not require a stormwater compliance or post-construction stormwater compliance. We are still going to require that even though it may not be a regulated project, we would still require that those projects would still look at meeting some of the post-construction requirements just because it makes sense. And the last thing we want to do is impact our stormwater. So we would still look at them trying to meet those requirements. It's just they're not as stringent as they would be if they were a regulated project. So that's the basics. If you guys have got any questions.
Is the changes going to apply to projects that have already been previously approved that haven't been acknowledging this? Are they going to be exempt?
It's going to apply to any project that is coming through that has not been approved.
So the ones that have already been approved, then they're still not going to meet regional water requirements.
Everything that I've seen so far, like the tracks and stuff that have come through, are all meeting those requirements. We've got a couple tracks right now that have got some single-family residential lots that they did not want to comply with this because of the zone and the 100% retention on site. But when those came through, I could not approve those with the way they were worded. And after I did some research, I found out that those were not in compliance with Regional Water Quality Control Board. So we've gone back to the engineer and said that you do not comply with Regional Water Quality Control Board. And now we're just trying to make our ordinance in compliance with the requirements for Regional Water Quality Control Board.
So those were individual residents on a existing approved subdivision then?
It was an
existing. Those will be required?
Yes.
So my question is that the city's ordinance isn't a safety net for the project, saying, well, I'm not going to comply because I fall under this exemption. The state of California, the State Water Quality Control Board, is the governing board. I mean, if they proceed with an exemption and knowing that it's not allowed, they're at risk of
right.
being written up by the State Water Quality Control Board. I would think, at very best, we should notify them if there is a project or pending projects that went through this exemption, informing them that they're proceeding without being in conformance with the State Water Quality Control Board.
I have not found any projects that are currently under construction that do not meet the stormwater requirements. I did find two tracks that have come through looking for engineering approval that were requesting an exemption, and we could not approve that based on the request for an exemption. So those ones have been turned back to the developer and to the engineer to relook at the projects and to comply with post-construction requirements.
Great. I had another question, and I mean, because I'm kind of looking at the whole document in its entirety, not just the parts that were striking out. At the end of the job, or at the end of the project, and it's granted it's final and everything, it looks like there's still things that have to occur on a yearly basis with report that needs to be sent to the State Water Quality Control Board. Who does that?
It is then put on either an individual property owner, if it's a single-family residence, or it's put on the homeowners association, and they are responsible for making sure those reports are done and turned into the city. We have one project that actually has a operation and maintenance agreement that is currently completed. We've got several others that are in the process of completing these O&M agreements. And then that falls then on either the property owner or the homeowners association for the maintenance and upkeep of the drainage facilities.
And that's where it should fall. A lot of time, I guess what I'm saying is a lot of times the owner doesn't know that. They think the engineer of record's doing it, and he's gone after final. He's not part of the process anymore, and the things never get done.
Right.
So then who, my next question is then who polices it when it doesn't get done? Is it the city policing it, or is it the State Water Quality Control Board?
It's because we have got an MS4 permit with Regional Water Quality Control Board, which basically says that we operate a storm drain system. And because of that permit, we're allowed to operate that storm drain system and discharge into the creeks. We are responsible for making sure that whatever water gets discharged follows the rules and regulations that were required. So it is our hope that because this is new and different from what we're used to, we're looking at trying to educate homeowners and property owners and developers on what's going to be required in the future so that the city doesn't get left holding the bag on a lot of this stuff.
And that's kind of what I'm alluding to. I don't know if we have that in this document or whether we should include that kind of language that would be in a condition of approval.
We've modified a lot of the conditions of our standard conditions of approval to address these items at the time the projects are approved. So we are internally working on our conditions of approval to make sure that we can meet these compliance issues. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things, rules and regulations change on a frequent basis, but then you've got to get people educated so that they understand, including the engineers that are now designing the projects. So it's something that's going to happen over time. It's not going to happen overnight. But the sooner we put the rules and regulations into place, the better off the city of Arroyo Grande is going to be. Because when things go awry, and they happen in the county of San Luis Obispo, the county of San Luis Obispo received a violation from Regional Water Quality Control Board. And the reason was they were allowing too many exemptions. And they had something very similar to what we're removing from our ordinance. And now they are under a watchful eye of Regional Water Quality Control Board until such time that Regional Water Quality Control Board is convinced that they are meeting the compliance.
Can they can we not, as a city, upon final approval or occupancy, have just a one-sheet flyer that says you are the property owner are responsible for following through with this? At least then that takes that liability off the city because you have given them notice in advance, and then something to that verbiage put into our documents so that safeguards us.
We're working on some of that stuff, and we're in the process of revising DO&M agreements so that the property owners and the developers are required to notify the property owners of what's going on. And if it's an HOA, that we've got money and contingency out there to help for them to maintain the facilities that they're proposed to construct.
I'm trying to run a scenario through my mind. The scenario that comes to mind is, let's say they've got a big project that has all these catch basins. And the designer is supposed to put infiltrators on that so the water that's discharging and leaving the project site is clean. Let's say those things don't get cleaned out, and they're all muddy, and mud starts going through the system. What I just heard is the city's at risk because that's leaving the system. Because those infiltrators weren't maintained.
The city's at risk, but we have to show that we've done our due diligence to notify the property owner that they're in violation. If the city does nothing and we find out about a violation or somebody discharging and the city's done nothing, then we are responsible. If we can show that we've done our due diligence to protect the stormwater, you can't make somebody do something they don't want to do, but if you show you've taken steps to try to get them to comply, then it takes some of the stuff off the city.
So this probably gets beyond what this board is responsible for, but I guess my next question is who's going to be going around to make sure these things are functioning so we can notify the owner when that's not being maintained?
One of the things we do is we have currently a full-time inspector on board, and one of the things he does is he goes through, is he will be looking at some of this stuff that's being implemented at this time, and he is going to be looking for things that are not being completed or things that are not being maintained.
Okay.
So, because this is a new regulation and we do not have a whole lot of history with it, it's going to take bringing people up to speed and trying to get people to understand what the consequences are for doing nothing.
If you're the engineer or the architect on the project, I think as long as the project is still unapproved or final, it becomes their responsibility. I know I did the SW3Ps and certified in that, and every project that we worked on, I did the plan for those, and I was responsible for going to the job site myself. And when it wasn't up to what we had on the plan, I mean, I just told them, you either bring it up or we're going to shut you down, because we didn't want to be responsible for it. I don't know if you know which ones some that I'm talking about. But so if, you know, if Regional Water hears that there's a problem, they're on site immediately.
Right.
And, I mean, this is way before the horrible storms we've had now. But
I think the city has to do its due diligence to notify property owners when they are out of compliance. And as long as we can show that we're doing that and doing whatever we can to help eliminate the issue outside of actually doing the maintenance, because that would not be our responsibility. But as long as we can show that we're working to try to resolve the problem, it's going to put us in a lot better shape. And over time, I think what's probably going to happen is individual property owners are probably going to receive some violations, and that's going to open everybody's eyes.
Well, that's where I'm saying we need to give them some kind of a written notification, because if the property owner is the one that's ultimately responsible for it, but if the contractor is aware of it and doesn't tell the property owner, then that's kind of a sad situation for him. So I'm just saying, when you either approve the project or the final approval or occupancy or whatever, the property owner needs to be given notification of that. Right. Otherwise, I heard, you know, when I was doing that, that nobody told me about it.
Sometimes it depends on, we've got a lot of drainage issues out there. We've got drainage easements that cross property lines where people have built fences and put sheds and done all kinds of crazy stuff. And it's impacting drainage on other lots. And that's stuff that already exists. And it's basically now up to the city to go back in and try to clean some of that stuff up. So we can't, as these regulations come down, we can't control everything immediately. All we can do is our best to help protect ourselves. And the big part's going to be to educate the people and the property owners that are buying these homes. Some of these tracts, there's actually drainage facilities. They're not on individual lots and are being maintained by homeowners associations. So it's going to be up to the homeowners association to comply with the post-construction requirements.
And I'm just going to add one important tool, and Robin's indicated this, is the maintenance agreement that's being required now to be recorded on these for these projects, and that's recorded on the properties and on the projects for the either the individual property owners or the HOAs, and that's the main notification. I agree, we're not going to be able to notify them enough, but we are working on making sure our materials are as robust as possible to emphasize the ongoing maintenance requirements that are now incumbent upon the property owners for their facilities and incumbent on the city to make sure we enforce that they're maintained over time. Some of them require annual reports to be submitted to us, and we'll track those. It's a considerable amount of work and effort, but we have it clearly outlined to us, and we're trying to make sure it's clearly outlined to those property owners responsible.
I totally agree with the notification, but you can keep telling someone 100 times. If there's no consequence, there's no reason to comply. So that's why I think we also need to, not necessarily us, define what a consequence would be, or the fine or the fee to pay for staff's time and because we're creating a whole program here, and now all of a sudden we're going to have a staff person probably dedicated to this into the future without really being compensated, or being compensated by the property owners that should be really paying for his time by not complying.
And that's something that right now we're starting to look into, what those ramifications are for not complying. And I think the Regional Water, we are going to be required with our annual reports that go to Regional Water Quality Control Board to show whether or not property owners are complying with those.
Yeah.
And if we can show that we've contacted them and we've worked with them, and for whatever reason they've elected not to maintain the facilities and that they are discharging, they will come in and they will place a fine on the property owners. And it's not going to be a pleasant thing. So it's one of those things with any rules, regulation changes. It takes time. It takes education.
That was new information. Thank you for sharing that. Because I was hearing that the city was going to get fined and that it's going to be our responsibility to go after the property owner.
But if we choose to do nothing, especially once something's been reported to us, then we are definitely liable.
Right.
But as long as we can show that we are working, trying to stay in compliance, because there's no way to make somebody do something if they don't want to do it. So it takes a bigger hammer than what we've got.
Well, being proactive instead of reactive is what we mainly need to do, because Regional Water will come in and shut them down.
Yeah.
So that's not the city's liability.
So, and if we need to bring Regional Water Quality Control Board in, that's one of our options. They are a resource for us to use. And if we're having a difficult property owner, we can choose to bring Regional Water Quality Control Board in before they get notified of a violation. letting them know that we've tried to work with the property owner, that they're not in compliance. So we have that ability to bring them in.
Okay.
So, and as the program develops, like I said, we've only got one O&M agreement currently. We've got several others that are starting to come in with these tracts that are being completed. So we're now trying to work through some of this stuff so that we're all on the same page and that everybody's educated and they know what their responsibilities are. So.
Very good. Any questions? No. Commissioner? I have no other questions at this point. Should we entertain a motion? I'm not sure. Anybody want to make any kind of comments before a motion is made, or should... Seems pretty straightforward. What we're really doing is simplifying the ordinance. We're removing some flexibility as far as the city being able to provide exemptions to this stormwater drain management system program oversight, whatever it may be. And here again, mostly clarifying, you know, guidelines and things of that nature.
Do we want to add on there that some kind of a disclosure on here that upon completion of a project, the property owner or the developer will be given notification that it's their responsibility and liability to follow through with the stormwater plan? Because it doesn't say that in here. If we're going to give them something in writing saying, hey, this is your responsibility, do we want to include that in here that you will be notified?
Part of that notification will be part of the O&M agreement, which isn't part of this ordinance. It's
if a property owner pulls this up, are they going to be able to read in there that it's become their responsibility?
No.
So, I mean, when we post this, you know,
the O&M agreements that are part of this, because it talks about the O&M agreements, but it doesn't have any specifics. The O&M agreements that we're currently putting together and we're working through with the developers has all the nuts and bolts to the requirements of maintenance. We're looking for where the locations are, and that all gets put into these O&M agreements. We will make sure in the future O&M agreements that we have some sort of disclosure statement for the property owners so that they fully understand what it is that they're getting into when they start buying these properties. And that can be part of the O&M agreement itself.
Which
they sign, right?
In this case, the developer signs, but if we tell or if we have it, depending on the type of tract it is, where you've got individual property owners, we can probably make it part of the O&M agreement that each individual property owner receives a copy of the O&M agreement.
I mean, that's the gist of the question I'm hearing. And the term I'm going to highlight here is just a regulated project. If I bought a house 10 years ago that doesn't have any O&M, you know, maintenance agreement with it, if that's not a regulated project, I don't have something to worry about.
Right.
If I have a historical project that either has or should have a maintenance agreement of some kind, the existing wording exists, I'm assuming, or what we're approving tonight has a mechanism to notify either that homeowner or that property owner or that HOA that they have certain reporting requirements or maintenance requirements in order to be in compliance with the regional water quality control rules and regs. Very good, thank you. With that, I'm happy to entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion that the Planning Commission, City of Rio Grande, recommend to the City Council approval of Development Code Amendment 18-001, Design Requirements for Post-Construction Stormwater Compliance, approved by Ordinance 660.
Is there a second?
Second.
We'll all second it.
We have a motion and a second. And we have a roll call vote, please.
Commissioner George?
Yes.
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Yes.
Commissioner Shiro?
Yes.
Chair Martin?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. Now you get your marching orders, now get to work, huh? Is that what I'm hearing? Get this thing cleaned up for all of our benefits. Thank you, Ms. Dickerson, for the presentation and your efforts in that regard. The next item is 8C, is a consideration of Development Code Amendment 17-004, amendments to Title 16 of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code regarding exempt signs. And we have a recommended action that the Planning Commission continue the public hearing to a date certain of February 6th. I'm assuming we need a motion to that effect, and I so move that we continue this public hearing item to a date certain of February 6th. Is there a second?
Second.
I have a motion and a second. May we have a roll call vote, please?
Chair Martin?
Yes.
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Yes.
Commissioner George?
Yes.
Commissioner Shiro?
Yes.
Look forward to seeing this item here in a few weeks. Are there any other public, non-public hearing items? Our agenda says none. I'm assuming there are none. Going on to administrative decisions, there were two administrative decisions that are being published in our agenda tonight. Are there any kind of questions or comments from the commissioners on either one of these items?
Yes.
Commissioner Mack.
132 Bridge Street. The conversion of existing retail space into two apartments, is that ground floor or upper floor?
It's ground floor.
Apartments allowed in retail space?
They are. When they're legally converted via building codes and things like that, they did have to get the plot plan review that's required for a mixed-use multifamily housing project and a mixed-use project per our municipal code.
So is it like a component of an existing retail space, or is it converting the whole retail space of a particular address?
This particular structure has the primary retail space up front, then several years ago they added on retail space in the back connected via a narrow hallway. In this instance, the property owner has proposed and was approved to basically cut off at that hallway the rear retail space and has processed the application to convert that area into two apartment units, one one-bedroom and one studio unit.
So, essentially, it's in the rear of a retail space in front of the street. Okay.
Horizontal mixed use.
I'm visioning it now. Thank you.
Yep.
And in that particular building, there's already an apartment that's on the second floor.
That's correct. That has actually been converted back to office space for the front retail portion.
Oh, okay. Any other questions or comments concerning those items? Any commission communications, things that commissioners would like to share with the staff and the community at this time?
I have something.
Please.
So we received, reading this, because we received 16 applications from local nonprofit organizations totaling $56,850 in requests. So we will be meeting to determine which of these nonprofits will be eligible for the $20,000 that we have available.
A daunting task to narrow that list down, no doubt.
Kelly has a ranking sheet that she supplies with the binder of information, and it makes it very helpful to check everything off. But we'll be meeting soon on that, so hopefully we'll have a report on some good news very soon.
Very good. Any other commissioner comments at this point? I'm seeing none, hearing none. Staff communications?
Yes, I have a couple things, and thank you, Commissioner George, and thank you for serving on the Community Service Grant panel that you were referring to. There's a couple other things. You should have received an invitation to our volunteer appreciation dinner we're having for volunteers in the community, including all our commissioners and committee members. That's on January 26th, and I hope to see you there.
Are you saying we're not paid for this position?
You're paid in good works. we also have the California League of Cities Planning Commissioners Academy again coming up, and it's in April, April 4th through 6th. We are budgeted for 3 commissioners this year to attend. So my suggestion is just to contact Debbie if you're interested in going. And if we have more than we're budgeted for, we'll bring it back as an item on the next agenda and try to sort that out. April 4th through 6th.
Okay. And where is that?
It's in Monterey.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
And that's all I have. Anything else, Matt?
I believe I brought 2 additional zoning maps for 2 of the planning commissioners. I believe everybody has one now. If you'd like an extra, just contact me.
Thank you, Matt. Anything you can tell us that's coming up here soon for us, like the Bridge Street project? Or
I don't expect the Bridge Street Bridge project to have any milestones that would come before the commission in the next few months. We're working on utilities and design issues for that project. What we do hope to bring forward in the next couple months is the Halcyon Road Complete Streets Plan. We're finishing comments on that, supplying them back to the consultant to put together our final draft that we could circulate for public review and bring shop through the committees and commissions. That may position us well on that project to go after some grants in the late spring, so we're keeping our eye on that. Let's see. The Briscoe Road Interchange Project, we met with Caltrans today, and we're trying to aim for a date in probably early February, sometime in February, to get it out for public review. So we'll be continually notifying you and the council and Traffic Commission on that project, and that, again, is the environmental document and the including the 2 alternatives. Let's see, Halcyon Road, Briscoe, anything else?
Development project-wise, just so everyone knows, I know we've continued the Popeyes meeting to a date uncertain. We do anticipate that to come at the February 6th meeting, in addition to the item that was continued tonight, which is the signage. So those are some of the development applications, as well as a multifamily housing project on Halcyon. So you'll be seeing those in the coming months as well.
Anything new with parking standards consultant moving forward?
That's included in the East Grand Avenue master plan, and we should probably have some report on that, just on status, fairly soon.
Certainly, and I mentioned, I believe, at the last December meeting that we were trying to identify a good date to have a joint Planning Commission City Council workshop to hear from the consultants on what they've started to discover and learn, and some of their preliminary findings. So we're still planning on doing that, but I'll provide more of an update at the next meeting.
Very good. With nothing else on the agenda, I hereby adjourn this meeting. Thank you very much.